Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, February 6, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If you would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. You can also support us by purchasing the book, Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law. You can also find them on the right-hand side of our website. Also, please consider joining our campaign for constitutional sheriffs, also found on the right-hand side of our website or on the front page a couple inches down. Okay, let me change page here. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in the book of Galatians. Reading chapter 2, read by Alexander Scorby, Book of Revelations, chapter 2.
Chapter 2. Then 14 years after, I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas, and took Titus with me also. And I went up by revelation, and communicated unto them that gospel which I preach among the Gentiles, but privately to them which were of reputation, lest by any means I should run or had run in vain. But neither Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. And that, because of false brethren unawares brought in, who came in privily to spy out our liberty which we have in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us into bondage, to whom we gave place by subjection, no, not for an hour, that the truth of the gospel might continue with you. But of these who seemed to be somewhat, whatsoever they were, it maketh no matter to me, God accepteth no man's person. For they who seemed to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me. But contrariwise, when they saw that the gospel of the uncircumcision was committed unto me, as the gospel of the circumcision was unto Peter, for he that wrought effectually in Peter to the apostleship of the circumcision, the same was mighty in me toward the Gentiles, and when James, Cephas, and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that was given unto me, they gave to me and Barnabas the right hands of fellowship, that we should go unto the heathen, and they unto the circumcision. Only they would that we should remember the poor, the same which I also was forward to do. But when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face, because he was to be blamed. For before that certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them that were of the circumcision. And the other Jews dissembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away with their dissimulation. But when I saw that they walked not uprightly according to the truth of the gospel, I said unto Peter before them all, If thou, being a Jew, livest after the manner of Gentiles, and not as do the Jews, why compellest thou the Gentiles to live as do the Jews? We who are Jews by nature, and not sinners of the Gentiles, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus Christ, even we have believed in Jesus Christ, that we might be justified by the faith of Christ, and not by the works of the law. For by the works of the law shall no flesh be justified. But if, while we seek to be justified by Christ, we ourselves also are found sinners, is therefore Christ the minister of sin? God forbid. For if I build again the things which I destroyed, I make myself a transgressor. For I, through the law, am dead to the law, that I might live to God. I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not frustrate the grace of God. For if righteousness come by the law, then Christ is dead in vain.
Okay. Jan, do we have any questions tonight? Or any announcements to be made?
We have about three of them. The first, I don't know what you can do with, John. It refers to a link to a website, and it asks, why wouldn't the evidence presented on this site be ripe for NLA's jural consideration? And it lists a website that is the ultimate weapons, blogspot.com. I don't know what you can do with that. But
what can you give? What is the website? Maybe I can type it in and take a quick look.
It's the ultimate weapons, period.
Period.com?
Dot blogspot, blogspot.com.
And then Nikki's?
Do yeah. I have that? Let's see.
It's under the integrity training.
Okay. So I don't know that we'd want to post anything like this.
It's not the weapons blog spot, John. It must have come up wrong.
Well, I didn't know. I guess it is. It does say ultimate weapons. .com. So, I don't, again, we don't want to put weapons up. We do talk in our book. We have a handbook for the militia. Matter of fact, that was originally written by Brent, and I posted his information, by permission for the purpose of putting together a booklet, because I figured, well, why reinvent the wheel? He did a real good job at it, and he's much more knowledgeable in that area than I was. But I did add into that a particular weapon that's used by the military that should be the weapon that everyone in the militia should own one. It's a military-grade weapon. But I do hear that the military is moving to a new weapon or an updated weapon. I don't remember the names, but we'll look into that. But again, people can figure that what they need to do anyway. But that's as far as we want to go with weapons, putting anything up. We're focusing and ultimately on taking back the courts through common law, and we're also taking back the political process, again, through common law. And our enforcement, we're expecting to be the military, both the militia and NORCOM. And we've seen some things they've done before. Yeah, go ahead.
When I clicked on the link that was in the email, I came up with the ultimate weapons blogspot.com, but it went to integrity training and talks about the 1787 Constitution, da 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 da, things like that.
Okay, and I think I listened to that. Who was the speaker on that? Was that?
I don't know who was the speaker on it.
Well, one of our members. I kind of recognize the voice for some reason. I just can't think of the name. But in any event, what was the question now?
Why wouldn't the evidence presented on this site be ripe for NLA's jural consideration?
Yeah, I did look at that. I did listen to that. If it's the same one that I'm thinking of, hopefully it is, because I'm going to make a comment on it. To get into a lot of detail and to spend a lot of time to educate ourselves in what the enemy is doing, how the enemy has accomplished their goal, to some degree that's important. I've done a lot of studies on that. I don't spend too much time talking about it. I've written a couple of papers on it. And I don't like to spend too much time on it because I think, people need to really learn the truth. They need to learn about the common law. We don't need to understand the enemy that deeply. We do need to understand, at least the idea of what the enemy is doing and some of the things, some of the legislation and the things that the United States Supreme Court and the federal judiciary and many courts after that. They kind of focused in and turned over to civil law, which is the same thing as Babylonian law. No difference. Roman law, civil law, it's all the same thing. And so they moved us into that direction in 1938 through the 1934 Rules Enabling Act. To understand a few of those things and understanding the idea where it came from, for instance, we can go back to the Reconstruction. I think the Reconstruction, which I think a lot of what I heard was talking about the Reconstruction, if I recall. The Reconstruction going back into after the Civil War. It was the I think it's called the Reconstruction Act, as a matter of fact. But anyway, there was Reconstruction. They were focusing in particularly on bringing the South back into the Union and so on and so forth. But really, I think that was really a cover story for bringing us into a democracy. I think that's when it really began. You know, when we sit down and listen to things on TV, for instance, on the news, and we hear the senators or the congressmen or the president or even U.S. Supreme Court justices calling us a democracy, it shows how ignorant they are, or maybe they're the enemy. You know, we have de facto President Obama, who in 2016 made a statement concerning Hillary Clinton winning. And then he said, the end of the republic never looked better. Now, that is an impeachable offense by anyone who is in office. And he was in office at the time, but he was coming to the end of his time. But any person, elected individual, who uses their position as a platform to spring forth subversion is guilty of treason and should be removed from office. And there is a law that says that, as a matter of fact. Anybody who teaches and, you know, matter of fact, maybe we'll look at that shortly if I can find it quickly. But we will be covering that a little bit, as a matter of fact, in our study that we're going to be doing on the law, access to the courts and common law, court access and the common law. But in any event, Obama understood we're a republic, but I'll tell you what, I haven't seen any presidents, including President Trump at this point in time, and also especially all the senators and the congressmen, they all believe, they're true believers, that we are a democracy. They use that word all the time. They never, very rarely call us a republic, and I do know when they come to understand this and realize, and if you can get their attention to look at the truth and what our founding fathers had to say about this, then they would realize the error of their way, and I'm sure they change their thinking. You know, all of us are ignorant. I speak to myself first. I mean, I was totally ignorant to all these things at one point in time, until I realized that we had to look into these things, started with the political process and into the judicial process. And excuse me. And then I became knowledgeable of what's going on. You know, I became enlightened to the problem. And we all have to do that, because we're all ignorant to the common law. We're all ignorant to our heritage and our inheritance. Our heritage is the law, the common law, and our inheritance is liberty. And if you don't know what your heritage is, you can't really fully exercise liberty, and your liberty is in danger of being lost. And that's why we are where we are today. If the people understood how the court system should work, that alone, okay, would save America. And that's why we endeavor so much to teach people the common law and to give as many courts as many courses as we can. And now with this new course that I'm really very excited about, it's going to give me a chance to really review my own knowledge as I put this thing together. But we'll be talking about that tonight. So let's move on to the next question, and then I'll come back to that.
Okay, next one is fairly long. I recently heard an announcement from President Trump in regards to taking action against BLM and Antifa. He mentioned that when he is president, he will call on the officials in towns that are infiltrated with the organizations that are displaying violence and destruction to take action, lest he use federal law enforcement to neutralize the situations in those towns. My question is, what constitutes federal law enforcement? When I hear that term, I look negatively upon it. When that term is brought up, it is usually condemned as something repugnant to our Constitution. The John Birch Society is one of the biggest opponents to such a concept and is constantly advocating supporting local police. I personally would like to see them promote the sheriff a little more. If, however, this comes to pass, how will federal law enforcement be justified, and how will it measure up against the sheriff?
Okay.
Did I lose you, John? Oh, you're looking.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. My mic was muted. I didn't realize. Yeah, I'm looking for something here in the Constitution, and I'm going to try to pull it up real quick. It is unfortunate, but the subversion in this nation, the enemies, both foreign and domestic, is so great, so deep, so wide. There's no way that local law enforcement can deal with the problem. As a matter of fact, I suspect, you know, when I read the front page on the military NORCOM's page, they were very clear on the fact that they talked about that if an emergency were to come about and law enforcement was unable to handle it, that they would take the front end of that and come forward to do what has to be done. And there is it is written in the Constitution for that, and I'm going to try to find that in a minute. And as soon as they believe that local enforcement can take control, then they will step back and allow them to take over and finish the job. But this is a military action coming up. It is a military problem. We have serious, serious problems, and they need to be really taken out quickly and completely as fast as possible as soon as the action takes place. And there's no way that local law enforcement is able to deal with this at this point. Now, I'm trying to think of a key word here. Let's see. Insurrection, I think, is the word I'm going to be looking for. Okay, maybe I spelt it wrong. Insurrection. How do you spell insurrection? I-N-S-E-R. E-C-T-I-O-N, is that right?
S-U-R, S-U-R-R.
I-N-S-U-R.
R.
E-C-T-R, two R's?
Yeah.
Okay, well, there it is, insurrection. So here it is. This is one of the authorities and the power of the legislator to write law, and they have done so. And it wrote down to providing for the calling forth of the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrection, and repel invasions. So if we were invaded, to repel them, if there was a insurrection, and there is an insurrection, to suppress it, then they would come forward. But again, if you go to their website, NORCOM's website, you would read the same that this is exactly what they would do. As a matter of fact, let me go quickly to our page here. Let me think where this is at. I think it's here, mandamus to the Supreme Court. Okay, and this is what is on their website. Okay, NORCOM's, reading right here, starting just two paragraphs. That's all I'm going to read. People can go here and read the whole thing for themselves. They should go into today's issues, come down to the mandamus to the United States Supreme Court. And by the way, here is our mandamus in full, all the paperwork from the demand to file right to the paperwork, which is a mandamus to the U.S. Supreme Court. But going back here, it says, U.S. NORCOM's civil support missions include domestic disaster relief operations that occurred during fires, hurricanes, floods, and earthquakes. Support also includes counter-drug operations, and they have been doing that too, and managing the consequences of a terrorist event employing a weapon of mass destruction. The command provides assistance to a primary agency when tasked by the DOD per the Posse Comitatus Act. Okay, and therein is what we're talking. Military forces can provide civil support, and it's written up in the Posse Comitatus Act. When we think about the Posse Comitatus, we think of the sheriff being able to call forth the citizens for assistance, particularly known as the militia. Remember, you know, if you go into New York State Constitution, it says every man and woman, and I think up to the age of eight, above the age of 18, I think, it is their job to secure and defend the borders of New York State, if and when called for. So everyone is part of the militia, and it's even recognized in many places. Now, the sheriff has the ability for posse comitatus, but here they gave also through the Constitution and through the Posse Comitatus Act, military forces were given that authority to provide civil support. but cannot become directly involved in law enforcement. That's not their job is. It goes on, in providing civil support, U.S. NORTHCOM generally operates through established joint task forces, subordinate to the command. An emergency must exceed the capabilities of local, state, and federal agencies before U.S. NORTHCOM becomes involved. In most cases, support will be limited, localized, and specific. When the scope of the disaster is reduced to the point that the primary agencies can again resume full control and management without military assistance, U.S. NORTHCOM will exit, leaving the on-scene experts to finish the job. So I think that's pretty powerful. I don't think that's been up there very long. I really don't know. I have a feeling this has been posted up there only in the past few years, maybe as early as 2017. And I'm wondering if anybody knows how to use the go-back machine, the time machine, you know, in history, to go back to look at websites, what they might have been said or on a particular page maybe 4 or 5 years ago. If anybody has knows how to use that and could look into that, maybe they can discover for us if this indeed was something that most recently was put up in the past so many years. All right, so anyway, there's no way to get to deal with the problem. We know that Sessions and Barr alone has combined and also with Durham. So far we've heard, the last we heard is that there was a total of 350,000, okay, sealed indictments. 350,000 sealed indictments and counting, okay? So that's telling. That's pretty telling on how deep this is. It's in every state legislature. And I remember... I'm trying to think of that the guy that was a wrestler, and he was a Navy SEAL, and he became governor. I don't know if anybody could think of his name.
Ventura.
I remember him talking about when he first became governor, and he was called out to Washington. And when he went to meet with these people, he walked into this big room, and there was a group of people sitting, you know, there, and there was one chair in the center of the room, and he was brought to sit in that one chair, and they looked at him, and they talked to them, and they read him, so to speak, the Riot Act, and in the sense that, we've got an individual, he's going to be working with you in your office, and he'll be reporting back to us, and so on and so forth. He was explaining how much the deep state has control right on down to the governors of these states. And I think some states are more stronger or powerful or more set up better that they could prevent that. I suspect that when you look at certain governors, like the governor down in Florida and so on. And again, I don't have any insight or great knowledge of those things. But anyway, it's a story that he told. And he says, so his whole administration was constantly monitored. And he had a lot of problems with those people. And that's how bad it is. So can the sheriffs deal with this? Certainly not. Can any local police force deal with this? Certainly not. No, this is the only thing could deal with this problem is the military. There is no other way. And that's what's going to happen. The question is when. I'm kind of surprised we've gone so long and we still haven't had, they haven't taken back control yet. But I do know that we've heard that they're waiting for certain tripwires. Once they get to certain points and certain things happen where they have to just come in and do what they have to do right away, so there are tripwires that could be tripped, and that'll just set the stage. This is when we're doing it. But there are also certain things that they're waiting to pass. One of the biggest things is to wake up enough people so that they understand what's going on. Because when this happens, people are going to be blown away. It's going to be very frightening. They're not going to understand what's happening. And that's why people need to see how serious the problem is. You know, those of us who have been awake for a while and dealing in the courts and the political system and seeing all the corruption and the problems we have, especially with judges, unbelievable. We were aware of what's going on and we're seeing the problems. But most people are not seeing these problems. They don't understand. You know, think of all the people you still see walking around with a mask. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people here in New York that go and shop and they're still wearing these things. You know, they don't understand. They haven't even heard yet that people are dropping dead from the shots that are being gotten from this. And the whole thing is really to get rid of people, to reduce the population. But in any event, people are waking up. It is getting pretty bad. Things are getting tougher. It's harder to live. And it's going to get worse before it gets better. and I do understand that we have to go through this in order to wake up enough people so when the military makes that move, they'll have somewhat of an understanding and hopefully an ear open to listen to as they release the information, take control of the media, and start really releasing the truth. And the truth, you know, well, as Q has said many times, it's going to be biblical. And it's going to be big, and people are going to be very, very frightened, except for those who are woken up, because we're ready for it. We know something. We may not know exactly what's coming down the pike. There's going to be a big scare, maybe nuclear. It seems the stage is being set for nuclear. So that might be the big scare, a war with Russia and China or something like that. Something big is going to happen, and that'll be the final wake-up probably for the people, and then the takeover, the take-back of our republic will go into effect. So anyway, where are we, Jan? May I get lost in too much?
We have one last question for you. It says, could you or Brent Winters take a few minutes to look at my paperwork? It was submitted by Joshua King, and there is no clue as to what the paperwork is or what it's about.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, look, I try to get correction if people are trying to correct me, and the best place to do that is right here at our open forum here. And it's good to do correction in public anyway, because then you can get as many people as possible to see the correction and make the changes in their thinking and so on. Paperwork on what? If it's a court case, lots of people want me to read a court case. I haven't got the time. I barely have the time to write the court cases we have, and we have lots of court cases to write, and we've written many hundreds of papers already. And we try to assist the people as best we can with certain issues, and we're kind of open to almost anything. We'll assist anyone with anything. They can join themselves to our case just by writing an affidavit. And so maybe that's the way we're going to go if people, but they have to be an affidavit that focuses on the facts. Anybody interested in that, they can quiz more information on that here at an open forum, and I'll try to lay out more of the detail on how that would work and how it would happen. we can still add cases to our case. And right now we have over 300 cases added to our case. And there's a lot of paper writing that needs to be done, and that's the main reason I'm doing this course on court access in the common law. So I don't have a secretary. I don't have any paralegals working with me. And so to get all this written up, it's an impossibility. And I'm expecting that the people who have cases with us definitely get into this course, because then I'll be working with them also, and this will be a really great education for everyone to see actual court cases being written and put together at some point in time when the time comes as part of the course. And it'll help us in learning how to write, learning how to structure things. And everybody would be able to write their own cases. I'd write up the framework for specifics if it was a situation with the failure to respond and deal with habeas corpus, and be a certain paper I'd write up, and it would be in a form structured, you know, that people can then add their information into it. Non-judicial foreclosures, even traffic court and various different things. We did take on a few traffic court cases, but people need to know how to do this on their own. By the time they get through this course, they will know how to do these things, and they'll always have the references of the original course that we'll give. They'll have access to the videotaping of those courses. And of course, the book, you know, Court Access in the Common Law. And I also put together a page, as a matter of fact. I might as well just, while I'm talking about it, just get through it right now. If you come down under Education Starts Here, you'll see Court Access in the Common Law. This is where you'll get information on how to get into the course. Now, if you'll notice, there's two other pages here. There's, let me get to it. There's Court Access Documents and Forms, and I started loading some stuff up here already. So there's a tremendous amount of information that I've loaded in here that we will be referring to from our course, and people will be able to use this information in order to write their papers. And so this will be very valuable, and important access, or shall I say, information that you'll be able to access. And I'll explain how to use this information. A lot of it has to do with footnotes. But also, we got two of Black's Laws dictionaries up there. I'm always working on the fourth. Occasionally, I like to look back into the second, so I included it here. But I use the fourth edition mostly because it's set up more of an easier cut and paste, where Black's Law second edition is a little quirky. It's older. But we also have Bouvier's Law Dictionary. So here's three dictionaries that are vital to our need to use in order to write cases and understand, you know, what's going on in the court, what they may be doing to be able to look things up and understand the meaning of words from the legal's perspective. So anyway, that's just one page. And again, the only people having access to these pages will be the people who come into the course. And the access will be constant forever. You know, you'll always be able to get access to that. And so you can download whatever you want or just come here to use it. The other one under the court access in the common law will be the video recordings that we'll have. And so we'll be posting it here. This page is under construction. I just have it as a placeholder. But anyway, it's a page also will be available to people, you know, that join the course. And if they want to go back to review, to listen, if you miss one or you come in late, at least you can go back and catch the beginning. And it's extremely, extremely important. I will make this point in the very beginning of the class. It is extremely important that you attend every class. And you should be early. You should be 5 minutes early. You know, the course is going to be starting at noon every Saturday for an hour and a half each Saturday. It'll be at least 14 chapters, but it probably could push over to 16 or more chapters. I'm in the process of writing it. We will start on Saturday, two Saturdays from now, not this Saturday, but the next Saturday. Definitely will start by then. Even if I'm not finished writing the course and I don't know how many chapters we have, I'll have enough written so we'll be able to go through the course. But I'm sure by the following week, maybe 2 weeks, but maybe the following week, the third week if necessary, I probably will have all of the chapters completed and up, and then we'll be able to know exactly how many chapters, how many weeks it's going to be. But we will focus in a lot. Well, we're going to focus in a lot of great things, a lot of great strategies, a lot of ways to get around in dealing with a judge that just refuses to obey the law. You know, this has always been a problem to us in our court cases, and it's only the past, I'd say, months, maybe 6 months, maybe even less, that I've come to certain strategies that I realized that created a strategy that would work to force these people to be obedient. And we will be covering that and many issues with this course. The course, again, brings us into law. And the key thing about law, law is your heritage. And remember, your inheritance is liberty. So you must know the law. So this course is not just for people with certain situations. This course is for everyone. Even if you've never been in court, even if you don't have any problems to have to get into court, people should know how to defend themselves. They should know how to deal with situations. And unless you want to give, you know, depending on the case, if it's a federal case, $30,000, $50,000, $100,000 to some lawyer, it could end up in millions. Because their justice is very expensive, and it's a justice that I wouldn't want anyway, because you're going to lose. They always maintain the status quo, work with the judges to maintain that status quo. So again, I wouldn't want to hire a lawyer, but there are some good lawyers out there, far and in between. They cannot push forward the common law because they lose their license. They're stuck between a rock and a hard place. But at some point, they're going to be able to break away and do the right thing. So there'll be some lawyers out there available. The other lawyers, once the bar is rejected out of courts of justice, which they must be, there's no way getting around that because of their civil law procedures and process and rules and lack of understanding of common law. They're going to have to learn about common law very quickly if they're going to want to keep practicing law. But look, if you go into court, maybe it could be wise to hire counsel. And sometimes you might let your counsel speak in areas that maybe they're better off speaking than you are. But if you're not operating your own case, if you're not running your own case, if you're not writing your own papers, and maybe working with the writing of a paper that a lawyer might put together and make the corrections, the necessary corrections, and you have to have the knowledge to do that, then you're going to spend a lot of money and just lose. But there's nothing wrong with getting counsel. And the counsel doesn't necessarily have to be a lawyer, but of course you'd want someone who has the knowledge of the law, and that means the knowledge of history, the knowledge of the founding fathers, but also knowledge of certain Supreme Court rulings and different things really just logic, because common law is common sense. That's all it is. You win your case by the facts, not the law, by the facts. And that which is just and right, you will win every case. If you have people who have been orientated properly, not subjected to the civil law and the craziness that's going on. But anyway, this is going to be a pretty powerful course, I believe. I've got my heart and soul in it. I'm really excited about it. And a great opportunity to really lay a big, long picture of what our mindset really should be to be free and independent, and what it really means and what liberty really is and how we can protect that liberty. And your attitude when dealing with people that are servants, in other words, people who are elected into particular offices, they need to, when you talk with them, they need to understand, and you don't have to necessarily say it straight out, but there's ways you can sort of signal to them that this is the way it is. I'm the boss, and you work for me, and you're the servant. And this is what's right and right and just, and this is what we need to do. And that's our attitude. We have to be dealing with judges, and we have to, in order to do that, you have to have knowledge, and you have to have a mindset, and you have to, be structured in such a way in your own mind that you can act with authority and be taken seriously. But again, we're going to cover all those kind of things in the course. It's all part of dealing in the courts. All right. I know it was kind of long on that. What else we got, Jan?
Well, a brief announcement. I'm sure you all remember the Brunson versus Adams filing at Supreme Court here last month. Well, Loy has refiled his case, and it's for a writ of certiorari. It's case number 22-380, and it's going to be determined on February 17th. Of this year by the Supreme Court, and it'll be the same thing as last time. All nine justices will get together and go over a bunch of things, among them Brunson versus Adams.
Now, is the paper changed much, do you know?
I think it's pretty much the way it was according to the video I watched. They're just recently.
Hey, I got the video. This is probably the video.
Hello,
you're talking
everybody.
About.
I am.
Is that the video?
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, we have that on our website for all the information on the Brunson case, we have a video on it. And you can also get a copy of the Brunson filing, which is right here. It's basically an 18-page filing to the Supreme Court, but the actual case itself was quite much larger than that. I don't know if we have a copy of that, but this is what they filed to the Supreme Court, so we felt that was all that people really need to focus into. So anybody can get that information on our website right now. Also, they're looking for letters to be written, help save the USA with two letters. and I guess I didn't look at this. Okay, yeah, this is a basically a simple letter, two-paragraph letter. We have them on a list, which mail will be going out tomorrow. They'll be getting a copy of our case, and I'll... I don't think I wrote a letter to them yet. I'm going to write a letter, and I'll send it over to you, Jan. You can check it out. Maybe you'll get to it tomorrow if you can, because I do want to get it out in tomorrow's mail or the next day at the latest. By the way, the United States Supreme Court was served today with our paperwork. All nine justices, plus an additional one to the whole, United States Supreme Court as a whole. And also the military has been served on this already. So they went out, and they've been served today. We're going to be sending out to at least 20 other individuals, maybe more, papers to certain senators, certain congressmen, and other individuals. So that hopefully all those will go out tomorrow. And we may find a few more here or there and send it out. But anyway, that's where we're at. Okay, anything else, Jan?
No, that's it.
Okay. All right. So anyway, the big announcement again is the fact that we're going to be doing this course. And again, I want to encourage people. I encourage everybody to come to this course. You really should. But in any event, we've given away everything for free for a long time. Our last course that we wrote, okay, which was Government by Consent, okay, which is one of our courses. Actually, no, the Jury Administrator Accredited course, I think that was, yeah, that was written after. So all these courses are free with the exception of Government by Consent course. And, you know, we decided to say, well, okay, if people want to get into that course, which is one of the most important courses we have going, we ask that people just be a premium member, which is someone, you know, supporting us with $5 a month or more, so $60 a year, coming out at five, you know, a cup of coffee and a bagel once a month, give it up, and that's it. I think liberty's worth that. We need money in order to survive. And so with this next course, which is going to be a course really to teach people actually to get into the law and into the courts and deal with things, I know I took a jurisdictionary course. We've talked about that before. It is written by a lawyer. I took it with a grain of salt because I was really interested in understanding process, court process, and not I wasn't interested so much in how they wrote things, but I got a lot of information, on causes of action, you know, that you have to really cover and structure, certain structure and paperwork. So we follow the normal structure, and I haven't found any problem with that. I mean, it is logical and acceptable. So it's a good way to go. So, it's procedure. So we all need to use procedure. But their rules of their court, their focus on civil law and statutes and which is statutes, codes, and regulations, focus in on that in opposed to really just the common law on its own. That's problematic, and you have to get rid of that. Anyway, I took that course. When I bought that course, it was $249, and I was able to download everything. I went out to that guy's site, and he's still giving the course for $249, but you can't download anything. You have to, it's important, you know, that's why I tell people they need to get the book Court Access and the Common Law for our course, because that's going to be your reference book. I have books that I have up here I reference all the time to get an idea on a form, an idea on a, you know, this or that, or to look something up. You have to have that in your dictionary. You got to have it. And you don't need no big library, okay? We're going to give you everything you need. But anyway, you can't download that anymore. He's kind of frozen into his website. So you have to go to a website to get it. He charges $249. The other thing is he charges $99 a year to continue your access. So if you take the course and you don't pay the $99 and you're writing a case and you have to go in to reference information, which you have to do all the time, then you have to maintain. So I thought, well, okay, we'll charge half of that, $125, we're giving a lot more than he gives. And you get to take everything home, and you can download everything. Our access and information online, you can download our videos and keep them on your own computer, or you can come up here. You'll always have access. Anybody who takes the course forever will have access to that. And many, many documents, many, many forms, all the things you need. And, you know, it may look a little overwhelming at the first when you look at these things and think about these things, but it isn't. It's very simple. And you'll find out, I think, by the time we get through Chapter 1, we'll have an introduction, and then we'll have Chapter 1. By the time you get through Chapter 1, you're going to have a really good, broad understanding of the structure of how things work. And it'll be mapped out very simply. And it's not a lot of parts. In criminal law, it's maybe 8 parts, and in civil, it's maybe 6 parts, you know, something like that. And then from there, it's just a matter of pulling these things together. And again, you know, knowledge comes with repetitiveness. The more and more you look at something, the more and more you read something, the more and more you, you know, search out something, the more and more your knowledge grows. And who can remember all of it? No one can remember all of it. But it does sort of flow out. It just kind of falls off your tongue as you talk about these things if you've spent enough time in it. But nevertheless, you still have to go to places where you reference. So you have to understand how things are put together and where the information is that you need to reference and how it works. This course will definitely give you that with all of the necessary information to access. And we do not get into statutes and codes and all those things. It's very limited on that. We will show you a lot of the very powerful statutes to use, or codes, whatever you want to call them, powerful to use to control these people who are elected individuals, because that's what it's for. It's for them. It's not for us. But they've made us to believe that we are a democracy. They've made us to believe that we're under civil law. They've made us to believe that codes, that they can write codes and, which is statutes to control our behavior. And they want us to make us believe that we have to pay for our license to exercise certain rights. Most people don't even realize that this is unlawful. This is unjust. And all it is really bringing us closer and closer into slavery and subjection to these people. So, all right, but anyway, so this course, as anybody who's looked up, education starts here, come down here, you click on that page. The other two pages you will see once you are in the course, you'll be able to get access to those pages. We are going to charge $125, and the main reason, a couple of reasons I'm doing that, we're upgrading our website, and we're already starting on it. Matter of fact, we gave the technician the authority to go forward now. We're going to throw him maybe a couple thousand, a thousand or two, and then see where we go from there. And so we need to get money to pay for this upgrade, and it's a major upgrade and some a lot of corrections and different things, and hopefully structuring the courses a little better. And the money's got to come from somewhere. So that's why one of the reasons why I decided to do this course. And the other course, again, the other reason is, there's numerous reasons, but a lot of reasons, but that's one of them. Another important reason was that I can't write 300 papers. We have to, and we need people. I'm as interested in anyone's case as they are. As long as they're following the process that we're setting up and getting involved and trying to learn and understand and be involved in their case, well, I'll be as interested in your case as you are. If people aren't interested in the case, there's a lot of people that have not signed up yet that, because again, with 300 people right off the bat, just got cases. The people who don't have who don't sign up, and I'm trying to get this message out, if people who don't sign up, I can't write their case. I cannot do 100, 200, 300 cases. It's just an impossibility. Plus, keep my all the work that I have to do here at National Liberty Alliance. I mean, that takes up all my time. But I can do it collectively, working with people, training people, giving them the proper forms, laying it out, and making sure they get it right, and going through all of the details. So I'm as interested as they are, and we'll get it done, and we will get these people's houses back. If we can't get the houses back, in most cases we won't be able to. We'll get restitution. People who've been in jail and been refused habeas corpus, they will get restitution. It will come. And the many other different kinds of cases that we've put together, they will get restitution. It's just a matter of time. And hopefully that time is coming up even before the turnover, because if we get the paper we filed with the United States Supreme Court, which is a writ mandamus, and we're not asking them to do anything, we're telling them what they have to do, because we're the lawmakers. That's something that people don't need to understand. The sovereign makes the law. Who is the sovereign? Well, the ultimate sovereign, of course, is God himself. He makes the law. But we have the authority to write law, and we're given that authority by the Declaration of Independence, which was a covenant with God, to live under his rules, under his laws, and to receive his blessings for that purpose, which, of course, is your liberty. You receive your liberty because God gives it to you. And if he doesn't give it to you, you don't have it. And ultimately, that comes with a lot of knowledge. But we also have the right. It's a right for us to have government by consent, and therefore we the people ordained and established the Constitution for them. That's what we've done. And when we go into a court, it's the people who decide whether we're going to bring someone into a court under a criminal matter or not. It's the people who will indict or not indict. And we have to stop being swayed by these bar attorneys, these that come to the grand jury to ask to demand an indictment and couch it in such a way that they get their ham sandwich every time. You know, all these prosecutors. Well, they shouldn't even be seeing the grand jury. That has never been in law anywhere. That's something that was created in the federal courts in 1970. I'm not sure where the states came into it, but federal courts never had the ability to call forth a U.S. attorney or a prosecutor, didn't have the ability to call forth a grand jury until the 70s, 1970s. But if you go back into history, they never were able to. Only two individuals, or three actually, two individuals ultimately were able to call forth the jury. That was the sheriff and the coroner. That's it. Now, the people can call it themselves, too. So, and that's what we, the people, have done. We've brought forth the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury for the sole purpose to deal with the subversion against we, the people, against our Constitution. But anyway, we are the lawmakers. We were given the authority and the right by our maker to have government by consent, to control our courts. You know, how many people know that there is the only court officers permitted in a court of law ultimately is the judge, and who's not a judge, he's a magistrate, and of course the sheriff belongs there, and then of course you know, whatever prosecutor or whatever, they'd be officers of the court. But the judge, there is no judge. The judge puts on a magistrate hat cap if he's a judge. He has nothing to say what goes on. He makes no decision. He doesn't tell the jury anything. Okay. And anything he says to the jury has to be liberating, and not really, you know, putting them into a corner and telling them, well, I'm going to decide the law and you get to decide the facts. And no, that's that is subverting the jury. That's jury tampering. And when a judge starts to do that, we'll give them a little leeway until they learn. But at some point, they need to be arrested for jury tampering if they continue a court case, a courtroom like that. But people don't know that. They think a judge can actually send you to jail. No one individual, especially a political animal, can send anyone to jail. No, you have to be sent. You can only be sent to jail, you know, through a trial by your peers, by the people. So the people get to decide whether they indict or not, and they have to be free and independent. We have to liberate them. And that's one of the jobs we're going to be doing by creating the administrations for the juries. The people have to decide whether these people are innocent or guilty in a trial. Okay, the people have got to decide what the law is. Okay, and the law, you know, we know through natural law that the law is written in the hearts of men. Everybody knows when a person has been wronged. We're on this planet and been around long enough to realize when someone has been injured and who did it eventually. Because truth is self-evident, and consistency proves truth, and it's a matter of a court case. It'll show itself, and they'll make the right decision. I think it would be very rare to make the wrong decision. I'm sure from time to time that might happen. Today it happens all the time, because they're really swayed by the judge and by the prosecutor and by what they claim to be the law. But the people decide. And the people decide, and if it's a court case that law is brought into it, maybe a particular individual working for a government agency or something in commercial activity, they're under regulations and codes, and they, you know, that's what it's for. Equity is for them, not for us, not for the people. But when that case comes in and a law is being applied against someone, well, we have the power and the authority to negate it. It's called jury nullification. No, we don't like that law. We're not going to apply that to this person. And in this case, it doesn't apply at all, so it's out of here. See, the people are the lawmakers. People don't know that. We get to decide. We can negate law. We can get rid of it. We nullify it right there in the courtroom. And people must understand that when they become a jurist. And the people decide what the penalty is. And it's not necessarily jail, because most of the time in common law, common law is not interested in jailing people. Common law is interested in bringing people to repentance. Common law is interested in restoring the individual that was injured. That's what common law is all about. And it will happen if the proper judgments are placed upon an individual. You know, they have these these statutes, and it says, well, if you do this and you do that, you go to 6 years in jail and pay a $10,000 fine, and you know, all that other. What benefit does that give to the individual who's injured? Okay, no, there has to be restitution. These individuals have to be restored. And also at the same time, the person who's done the wrongdoing, you want to bring them back into society, and in the process of the punishment of restoring and seeing the damage, and there's lots of different ways we can work this out so they really understand what's going on. There's a good opportunity for restitution, not only just restitution, but also for repentance and being brought back into society as a good citizen, a good individual. That's what common law is all about. But there are times when, of course, you have to put certain people in jail because they're violent or whatever the case may be. Or if they're a judge, especially, there's a judge that was boasting in his retirement up here in New York. I think it was in New York. I heard this, Gerard was telling me the story. and he boasted the fact that in his career, he's put out a million years in jail to people. Well, that's nothing to be proud of. That's a sad situation. That person has damaged a lot of people. But anyway, justice will be decided as time goes on by the people once we get our courts back and the people run that court. And the individual that they chose to be their common, to be their, you know, the law keeper, and that's the sheriff. And they choose that sheriff, and he's the one that takes cases to the jury because he's not connected. You know, when you have a prosecutor that's all politicized and maybe people in power or influence the case, hey, we got to get this guy. We got to make sure he gets into jail. We got to make sure he's guilty, blah, 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 blah. Well, he tries to bring the case before the grand jury. Well, he can't do that no more. He's got to bring it to the sheriff. And the sheriff's going to take that case and look at it and look at all the evidence, and he's going to make the decision whether that should be brought in or not. But they're not going to be able to abuse the jury, okay, because the sheriff will bring it. He doesn't have anything in the game here. He's coming in here. He's working for the people, or he should be, and we need to know this sheriff, and that's part of what we're doing with the committees of safety. You got to get to know your sheriff. Is this guy a good guy? Is he obeying the law? Does he know the law? Is he a constitutionalist? And if not, you know, read the Riot Act to him and say, buddy, you better wise up and bone up real quick because the election's coming up and we're not going to support you. And if they're really that bad, you know, take them out of power. You can do a recall and have them out of power in 90 days. That's the power of the people. That's government by consent. These are the things that the people need to be doing and understanding. And I'm going to, you look at the people come into this course, a lot of them may not understand this. But hopefully by the time we get to the end of this course, they will understand all these things. And then I'm going to employ upon them that look at, now you have knowledge. You need to get involved locally, you know, with your local committee of safety. If there's not one, you need to start one. Work with people to get one going. And you can give a lot of information with the knowledge you have and share them to get them to get knowledge. You can give all that information and help the people within your community to bring things back into order. We need to bring our schools back into order. I think we've lost everyone under 40 or 50 with very few exceptions. You know, there's exceptions to all things, but the schools basically have been destroying our children for quite some time. And 30, 40 years old, I think anyone under that age in most cases are lost to a lot of problems. They don't have what I know. They don't have what I grew up with. I grew up with a great sense of patriotism. Patriotism when I was a very young child. Patriotism was part of what we did. I grew up in New York City, and patriotism was a big thing. And people don't seem to have that, you know, and they don't understand who we are as a people on our heritage. They're confused, and they run after all these different things, this, that, and the other thing. But if only they knew the truth, that the truth was laid out to them, and the power and the authority of that truth, and the justness of that truth, the ability to see common sense, because they've even destroyed our children's common sense. They've destroyed a lot of our common sense. Things aren't very sensible anymore, it seems. We've got very, very far away from the light. But in any event, you know, if we teach our children the right things, then they can see the garbage that they don't need, and recognize it and do the just thing and the right thing. We have to teach our children morality. We have to teach our children how to handle a weapon. We need to teach our children how to drive. We need to teach our children the common law. We need to teach our children civics and the Constitution. And I'll be writing a lot of papers on this and suggestions to people at the grassroots level to execute or to enhance and change and to add to or take away whatever I write. You know, people are free and independent. They need to do what they need to do. But I do trust. Jefferson said he trusts the people. He trusts the our government and our liberty in the hands of the people, but not the government. But you have to be an enlightened citizenry. You have to have a proper education. You have to understand your heritage and understand your inheritance. You need to have a morally minded. You know, God is not going to bless anyone with liberty if you're not morally minded. If we're going to be a Sodom and Gomorrah, think not that you'll have liberty. You will not. And we are right there at the cusp of being Sodom and Gomorrah. It is that bad out there. But there's a couple of good things that we have to focus in on. I think it was Franklin that said that we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. That's how we have government. So, you know, it only takes a handful of people in every county to take control of their government and bring it back under order into subjection of the people, bring your congressman into subjection of the people in that county, in that particular congressional district, to bring your other representatives in your state, you know, whether they're senators or legislators in your state legislation, to bring them into your subjection. You have the power and the authority to do that, just a handful of people. You know, a handful of people is maybe 100, 200 people working together in committees of safety to bring every school within your state, within your county, and eventually other committees working in your state to bring them all back under the subjection of the people, to have where the people decide what the curriculum is going to be, where the people decide what their children are going to learn. And the people need to step up and take care of this business. Otherwise, you're going to lose it, and your children are going to lose it. This is what we have to do. And so I'm really thankful to have the opportunity to be able to bring this course up, because I think this will be the course that will really pivot knowledge to the people and really bring the people to a realization of the importance of understanding the law, understanding our court system, and taking control of that court system. 100% the people need to control the courts. 100% the people need to control the political process. And we're teaching people how to do that also. Our founding fathers already taught us how to do it. And we're doing exactly what they did, creating committees of safety and subcommittees, taking control of all aspects of our government that have control over us, to bring it back to the people and taking control over them. And to stop them from writing legislation that has nothing to do with anything, that they don't have the power or the authority. To stop giving people money, you know, and putting our money all over the planet. Maybe there are times when that might be good, but they don't have that power or authority. I haven't read it in the Constitution where they can give all this money away and then it's on the people's back to pay for it and to pay it out. You know, I think about going on to the phones here with government agencies for different various things over the months and a few problems here or there, and you're on the phone forever. They waste your time. They don't have enough people there to answer the phones. Then you'll get recordings all the time. You talk to AI. It's a chess game that could pass them. Big corporations have done the same thing. All this got to stop. The people can make it stop. How? Through the committees of safety. We'll work on it from the local level, and you get enough committees of safety going, you'll make that turn, you'll make that change. It'll happen. But the people have to do it. And this is how our founding fathers did it. Our founding fathers ran the nation before through committees of safety. They came with the Continental Congress and the Second Continental Congress through the committees of safety. They formed this government under the committees of safety. They maintained this government through the committees of safety. But then the enemy got control of it. They took control of the political process, placed in party boards, statutorized the committee man, and you have the total control ultimately by the powers that be. Did the same thing in the courts. They totally destroyed our courts of justice. It's unrecognizable. Our courts, when you get to knowledge of the truth and an understanding of common law and an understanding of the law, how it is, And you compare it to what you see what's going on, it's unrecognizable. We're third world. We're worse than, we are in trouble. We're enslaved. And it's not much time to fix it. And if you think Trump's going to fix it, forget about it. I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you because he can't fix it. Only thing Trump can do is he can do what he has to do and exercise the military, do what he can do to get the people excited about things and give it back. He said, I was elected not to take the power from the people, but to give it back to the people. That's what he said. And that's what he is going to do. And that's what he's doing right now. And he will finish performing that. There's no doubt in my mind about that. But can the people accept it? Can the people take it? And I tell you, they cannot take it. They don't know how to take it. I get people all the time. They say, we want to get these grand juries going in our county, this, that. And they're not ready for it. They're not mature enough. They don't have enough understanding. You know, it would be a wrongdoing if we try to help people to get empowered to become, to work out the grand jury problem, maybe as administrators, and not to educate them for the position that they're taking, because ignorance builds on ignorance. We may be creating a bigger monster, wouldn't we? No, but people have to understand how things work. They have to understand what is right and what the process is. They have to understand the law. They have to understand the heritage. They have to understand all these things. They have to get a proper education, because none of us has had it. Unless we learned it on our own, and maybe there's a few places here or there you might get some information. But even some of the great places that are teaching some really good things, they lack the understanding of a republic. And they miss out on a lot of the things that our founding fathers had said. They've totally lost track of the fact that they can have total 100%, not 99, not 99.99, 100% control of their government. Okay, and it's done through two PowerPoints, political and judicial. You must take them both back. If we don't take them both back, we lose it all. Can't have it. So Trump is doing the right thing, and he's trying to give it to the people. But we, the people, have to be able to receive it and execute it in a just fashion. We have to be just. People are angry. I'm angry, too. But I will never act in anger if it came to anything with trying to judge an individual. You have to be just and right in your heart and do the right thing, and you can't act out of anger. You can't go having people, going in and trying to get people indicted out of anger. No, it has to be done properly, and it just has to be done right and just. So anyway, that's what we're teaching here. That's what needs to be done, and people need to get involved. And once you get the education, I do think even those who don't think they have the time to give back to the community, because we have a republic here, we just have to get it back. But I think by the time we get through an education, I think people will see they have no choice but the duty to do the right thing, to step up and get involved in their community locally and have government by consent and train up their children on the way that they should walk. And God says if you do that, they will not depart from that. When they get older, they will not depart. That's how they will be. I look back to the main things that I was taught when I was a child, and I have never departed from. I have strayed away, only to find myself back because it was instilled enough deeper inside of me. You know, we all get that rebellion, I think, or most of us do. But anyway, let's get back to. We don't have any more questions or no more statements, no more announcements, right? We're done?
No, that was the end of it, John.
Okay. All right. I don't know, is Gerard here? If you see Gerard come in, let me know, and if Brent is in here, let me know. Meanwhile, we'll go over to take our questions. So let's go to the Q&A here. We have quite a few people in the Q&A. We'll take our first person. Looks like Ross, you got the mic. Right ahead.
Hey, John. I did request...
If you're going to talk about the email you sent, Jan will give you a call. We'll work something out with you.
Okay.
So we don't have to discuss that. But go ahead. Anything else?
I hope we get control back over the courts.
Absolutely. If we don't get back control of the courts, we will not have our liberty. Let me tell you, right now it's all but lost. People just think they have liberty until they start exercising and rubbing the wrong person the wrong way. They find themselves in court, and they're going to find out they don't have a constitution to protect them, and they don't have their liberties that they can exercise. The judge will tell you you're not going to talk about that anymore and find you in contempt if you continue. We're going to teach ways to go around that, but in any event, that's what they will find out. And they don't know. They don't know. But they'll find out if they ever end up in court. And at some time in your life, you will. But once we get to the other side, at least we'll have just courts. But you need to understand how they work. You need to understand how to control them, and therefore control your future, because you control the courts, the judicial system. And
John, how can I get rid of my sophisticated trust?
Get rid of your what trust?
Sophisticated trust.
And I'm not sure of the first word that you're saying, but...
He's talking about his
SESQ.
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Well, look, that was something that... You know what? When I look into history and find out what they did, especially back at the turn of the century, coming into the 20th century, they created the Federal Reserve Act. They created the 16th Amendment. They brought in the 17th Amendment. And they did this with a handful of people, and some of them they did like on Christmas Eve or something, and where nobody was there, and it's just a handful of people. They took a vote, they did it, and they executed, they put it in place, and it became law. I mean, they did a lot of that stuff that way. They said that certain things were state-approved, you know, and they wouldn't. And how did they get away with it? Because people wouldn't see, they wouldn't watch, and they didn't know. But at some point in time, and I don't know when this happened, you know, eventually things got televised, and that made things a little better. And there was some negotiation and that's where the SESQ accounts came about. But people don't know about the SESQ, so they really don't even know to go and to draw off of it. And anybody who does try to draw off of it, I know the last person that I knew that went to draw off of it got quite a bit of money, I think $150,000 or something. And then the next day, or a couple of days later, his door was knocked down and raided, and they went to arrest him. He just happened not to be home, and he hasn't been home since. And that's years ago, because he went forward to execute those SESQ accounts. So they're very dangerous to even mess with. They don't belong. When you think about how big the enemy is and how much they control, all of the monies that they've got, they got all kinds of liquidity, they got properties, they got so much, big corporations, they got mother corporations and many corporations inside of those corporations, and the Rothschilds alone, I don't even think they're a billionaire or trillionaire, they may even be more than that, I don't know, but I think they'd be at least trillionaires. I mean, they're the richest family in the world. And they are the really the ones who really put the whole thing together. Someone needs that noise there. Okay. Anyway, there's a lot of money being held by the enemy, the Federal Reserve in itself. I know Trump has seized a lot of gold. And, you know, you don't hear about that in the news, but we do hear about that, and then he brought it back into this country that was originally belonged to the people. And all of these people that have been doing what they're doing, when they get arrested, well, remember, when you steal, if you rob a jewelry store and you steal the diamonds, when you get caught, you got to give it all back. Trump has said that a couple of times. So he's telling you right up, you're going to get the money back. It's coming back to the people. We're talking trillions and trillions of dollars. Someone needs to mute their mic because we're getting radio or something through.
But I think you're going to like. Okay.
Is that you, Ross? That TV or something in the background?
Yes, it is.
Just mute your mic when I'm talking so I don't hear it, okay? And then we'll, you can unmute when you want to talk. Anyway. There's trillions of dollars involved here that's going to be returned back. We're talking in assets, hardcore assets. And that's going to go back to the people. Corporations are going to be sold off, when they seize, they're going to be sold. And the profits, the monies that come in for those sales will go to the people. We need to be restored. And it's not just the restitution of the people of the United States. Although we've paid the biggest price, nevertheless, the people around the world need to be restored. And so they control, I would venture to say, 99% of everything. I mean, I don't think that that's really ridiculously off or anything. It's that bad. And, you know, you think about the pharmaceuticals that they control alone. You think about the legal system, the laws, all this stuff, all this control. All that's going to come back to restore the people. So I wouldn't worry about CESQ accounts. I don't even think about them. Don't go near them. It's too dangerous. You get yourself in trouble. It's all going to go away, but people will be restored. And that'll be that.
Hey, yeah, John?
Yeah.
I learned that was done since the 13th century. Because of the...
I think it did take effect in the 19th century, sometime after the Organic Act of 1871, sometime after that, and there was negotiations made. You know, we lost the war against these maniacs, these psychopaths, and it was known. They took control of our Congress. Our Congress was taking total control back in 1871 through the Organic Act. That's where it began. I mean, it was really before that, but that's the biggest part of the recreation or the restructuring of law. And then, of course, there is a lot of things that took place after that. But the bottom line, though, is somewhere, sometime after that is when the CESQ accounts were created and there was a negotiation, okay, we'll give the slaves a little something if they want to, but then they hid it from them, and then they go out and destroy you if you try to take it. So don't even play with it. It's all going away. It's all fiction. It's all unlawful. It's unjust. It's wrong. It's got to go. And it will.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Ross. And Jan will give you a call. All right?
Okay.
We will take our next caller. It is, is that Patricia from New York? You got the mic.
Yes, hi, good evening, John.
How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. I came to the call a few weeks ago with the same question, and now that I ordered the book and I have the government by consent, I'm a little bit confused on how do I start my research to start my process. Now, here's the thing. I sold my house to someone, but the real estate bought it from me, sold it to him, and I have a document that states that they should have gave me a balance. Uh-huh. Now, this case went on back in, this incident or crime happened back in 2011, and I still have no closure. And I want to do something about this because the person that finally got the house back from the real estate and they finally, the court made them, the real estate turn the deed over to the buyer. The case is still going on with him, but everyone is neglecting me, and they still have not paid me. Mm-hmm. Now, I have the book, Government by Consent. I just don't know where to start the search.
Okay, so let me ask you, are you talking about the book Government by Consent, or are you talking about Court Access and the Common Law? There are two books that I wrote.
Well, I'm talking about Government by Consent. That's the one you told me.
Yeah. Government by Consent is a good book. You can learn a lot about the law because it is the law, but it doesn't show you court process and procedure. It doesn't show you how you can go into the courts, take control of the courts, and win your case. It doesn't show you that. Court Access and the Common Law, that book I wrote for that purpose, which is Court Access and the Common Law. And I'm giving a course on that starts not this Saturday coming up, but the following Saturday, which I think is the 18th. Let me take a quick look to see what day that falls on. It's Friday, Saturday the 18th. So that's when the course will begin. And the name of that course is Court Access and the Common Law. The book, and if you want to sign up for that course, this is how you will learn how to go into court and take control and win. Once you see, people come and ask me a lot of questions and they try to tell me about their court case and there's no way I can go through all this and they have to understand certain things. So there's too much to explain and it gets too complicated. But if you understand the things, the basics and the structures and the procedures and the process and you understand all that and you kind of get the big picture, which is very easy to get, I'm telling you, you're going to get that within the first two Saturdays. One will be the introduction in chapter one. By the time we get to chapter three, I'm telling you, you're going to have a good understanding and a place to be able to stick all the information that you're going to learn because you'll understand the structure. And that's what you need to do. Hold on. That's what you need to do is understand the structure. So once you get through this course And then I talk to you and I give you a little information. You have a problem. I could say, well, you could try this, that, or the other thing. I don't have to explain everything else, and it'll be very easy, very quickly, and we could do it over an open forum. But to get into details with people who have no knowledge of any of these things, it's just too difficult to do. Okay. So what I tell you is this: if you and remember, in common law, there's no such thing as statutes. Ultimately, it's all built upon common sense. It's called maxims. And so common law is built with a series of maxims. And one of the maxims of common law is, for every injury, there must be a remedy. That's a common law maxim. That's a fact. It must, justice must prevail. And it doesn't matter how long ago. They can talk about their statutes of limitations. It means nothing to us in common law. Because as what makes a case valid and the ability to go forward is the ability to have all of the proof and the necessary witnesses you might need are still around and able to do it. If that's not there, then you're not going to be able to do it. But as long as you've collected and got all of the evidence that you need to get, and possibly even some witnesses maybe, and you still have access to that information and you can pull that together, then you can go back into the court and you can win that case and get justice. And we can teach you how to do that through this course, and you'll be able to write your own papers on this. It's going to be a dynamic course, I'll tell you. And on top of it, we're going to have about 5 or 6 major types of cases that we're going to discuss in detail. And that's going to be real. And those will come up, I'm not sure when in the course, but it'll come up at some time in the course, because we'll have to respond to, you know, to the courts as far as all the cases we've connected to us. But we're going to teach you how to deal with the IRS. Very powerful. We're going to teach you how to deal with traffic court. We're going to teach you how to deal with non-judicial foreclosures and habeas corpuses and a few other things. These things are going to go into details, and you'll have a framework of a body of work, you know, for each one of these things, a framework to be able to take it and just put your information into the paperwork and replace the information that's there with your information. And it's pretty much it. It's done in a form. Now, the other thing is when you go into court, if you're not a good articulator, then you're going to want to get somebody that'll help to articulate your case. And that you may need to do. But as long as you can articulate your case, you need to go in there with a sense of authority over these people. You have to act with an authority without being, you know, insulting or anything of that nature. But the certain signaling that you want to do to the judge, and, you know, your paperwork, you want your paperwork to be pristine. Really nice, pretty. These guys, I see them come into court and they scratch all over the papers. They'll cross something out because they're too lazy to go retype it. Okay, and they have no respect. And their paper, even if it is typed, a lot of it is really horrible. Their English is far worse than mine, and they really lack logic and a lot of things. I don't know. It's just horrible in court from my perspective. Sometimes you get it. Good lawyer that can really articulate well and lay things out. The thing is, though, when you go into court, your paper has to look intimidating, not only to the other side, but also to the judge, because you want to bring that judge back into the proper place. He needs to become, not a judge, but he's just there like a traffic cop. That's about it. He's a magistrate. All he does is he expresses your will. That's what the judge is supposed to do. Okay. Mm-hmm. A magistrate. When the court makes a decision, guilty or not guilty, the judge executes it. The administrators of the court, which we have one paralegal, will write the papers up to represent the will of the decision of the court, and then the judge will have to then execute it and send it out to the sheriff, and the sheriff goes out and executes whatever warrants are necessary or whatever needs to be done. You know, but you have to have a good mindset, a knowledge, and in my opinion, in a very nice, polite way, intimidate people. Intimidate people with the fact that you know something that they don't. And no matter what they come at you with, you can come back and squash them. And it's all done really with just ultimately common sense, because that's what common law is. And common sense will always crush all these civil things and this craziness that's in the minds of these people that are running our courts, and we need to stop them from running our courts.
Yes.
So that's what I suggest to you. Take the course. You can go up here. Under are you on your computer? Can you see what I'm doing on my desktop? Anybody?
No, I'm not on the computer right now, but I'll look it up.
Okay. Well, come under. You come up to Education Starts Here. Highlight that. Come down two down to Court Access in the Common Law course. Read the paper and do what it says on the paper and get into the course.
Okay.
Meanwhile, and I'm going to give you a lot of instructions on further education, self-education. You know, there'll be homework every week. It won't be much, and you'll see it'll be very logical and really repetitive for the purpose of really throwing this stuff deep into your memory. I'm going to give some reading, short readings that people should be doing, and then some longer reading that maybe at the end of the course that they'll do. There's quite a few books that are very, very enlightening that will also enhance and help your education in this. You know, education is really all about reading, and it's all about understanding what you're reading. You know, comprehend the words, understand, don't let a word go by, don't let a sentence go by, don't let a paragraph go by. If you don't understand it, stop, go out, get your dictionary, try to figure out what it is that you need to understand that's preventing you from understanding what's being said. And then you move on. Once you did that, you really dug that deep into your brain. It's in there. And when you go and through repetition, because things will be repeated here and there, and it'll really, you know, embed it more and more into your brain, and you'll get it. So education really is very simple. It's just understanding what you're reading and just golfing yourself as much time into it as you possibly can. You know, you have to be interested in it, and it's fascinating. I'll tell you what, I find it very fascinating, common law and the study of our heritage, our founding fathers, the history, extremely fascinating. I can't stop looking at it. It's just so fascinating. But anyway, anything else?
No, that'll be all for now.
All right, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to our next caller. You're welcome. Let's go to our next caller, next question. And it is, let's see, I want to hit the wrong button. Let's see, 612, Minnesota, I think it is, or what state?
Yes, I'm here.
What's your first name?
Hi, my name is Kathy.
And your state?
Iowa.
Iowa. Okay. Go right ahead. Kathy from Iowa.
My husband it's a complicated story, but my husband is in an unjust, fraudulent guardianship in Minnesota. He fled from Minnesota May of 2022 to move to Iowa. It's a real complicated thing. He was just kidnapped from the hospital. On the 29th of December, he was diagnosed with cancer.
Who was kidnapped from the hospital?
My husband was.
Okay, your husband was kidnapped?
My husband was.
Okay.
Yes. He fled to Iowa from Minnesota to avoid the abuse of guardianship. And in these fraudulent guardianships, almost 100% of the time, they put a fraudulent harassment restraining order against the person that's trying to help them out of the guardianship.
Yeah.
So I know this because my mom was in a guardianship, and so my mom was murdered by her guardian, and I wasn't able to save her. So now this is the second time I've gone through this, and I'm very much fearful of what they are going to do with my husband now. They've kidnapped him out of the hospital. They arrested me in this hospital room, and kicked my friend John that was there with him, kicked him out, and it's really a messed up situation.
You're in probate court, right?
Correct.
Okay. Probate court is probably the second most evil, destructive criminal court in the nation. The first being family court, and probate is second to that. And we talk a little bit about the probate court in our paper to the United States Supreme Court, along with the family court. These courts are unjust. And probate court has a place, but they've been abusing that place. You know, when you have a situation with a family, The government has no business interfering with that situation. And probate court can be used in order to assist them, but unfortunately it's used to abuse them. And their whole business from the judge on down is about making money. It is evil,
right.
evil. And we are looking to deal with that. And one of the very first things on the other side, there's a couple of things we really want to focus on, very powerful, but one of them is family court and probate court. Now, again, I'll get back to you. Everything I just said to the woman before you, you know, applies to you also. Get into the course, learn how to do it, learn how to defend yourself. You know, you may have some experience and understanding, but apparently you don't have the solution yet, and maybe we can help find that solution. Well, we will find that solution. We have a lot of things on controlling judges and stuff, and we'll be teaching that in court. When a judge breaks the law, you have to deal with it carefully, okay? And if you have paperwork have to be written in such a way, you have to have certain, because you already know what they're going to do, and our paperwork has all the controlling factors within it. We put in the law of the court, or law of the case in there, and it's all common law, just and right. And so we'll do a reference back to that and ask the judge to make a reconsideration on the decision they're making right now. And if they don't...
Yeah, I'm just concerned he has stage 4 cancer and his guardian is not allowing him treatment for this. It's very serious.
I don't know of a quick way to do it other than learning what to do, and taking control of the case, and also getting to the other side. And at stage 4, it is very close. It's sad. And you may not make it in time. That is true. I don't know what else to tell you right now. You know, you got to get knowledge, okay? And we'll give you that knowledge, and also controlling knowledge. And one of the things, you know, I you understand some things, but you got to be careful. I'll tell you one thing you could do, and that is what's called a quo warranto. And a quo warranto ultimately is a demand for the judges and all the officers of the court, not just the judge, every lawyer in there. Okay, it's a demand for their oath, their bond, and their what do you call it, their financials. And what you're looking to do is to take the abuse before an administrative system that's disconnected from the courts, which is the people who run the bonds. Okay, and I understand you can get good justice from them. They're good arbitrators, and they really are focused in on what they're doing. The money goes out to the people.
They sold my husband's house that he's owned for over 50 years. They sold that on December 5th against his objection and my objection.
Absolutely.
They're just rabid.
Absolutely. They're thieves. This is what they do. They exhaust the entire, everything that you've worked for all your life. Mm-hmm. They take all these elderly people, our parents. Look at they destroy our family in family courts, and they take away our children. They have no business doing that, okay? Mm-hmm. I've been in situations with other people, and even in my own family, where they've done this to somebody, and I'm family. I'll take the children. You know, they won't even let you, they won't talk to you, won't let you see your children, nothing. They think that they're God. These people need to go to jail. That's what jail was created for, in my opinion. These people are so evil. But we need to get into these courts and get rid of these courts and put forward something different. We already have a proposal for something different for that, for the family courts, and it applies to the problems with the people in the probate courts. Because a lot of these problems still should go back into the arbitrational process of a family situation, not by lawyers, but by clinicians, people who understand and have certain knowledge in different social areas. And maybe a psychologist, a social worker, this, that, but not people who are, lawyers, because the last thing you want is a lawyer to get involved in a family issue. And the purpose of these family courts should have been, and the whole process is all about repairing the family, trying to educate the family, to bring things back together, to bring order back to them, or solve the problem if they have to separate in a just fashion and so on. Again, we're writing papers on this. We did write a memorandum on this. It's in the paperwork that we delivered to the United States Supreme Court. It was filed. They were served today with our paperwork.
Yep.
And it's found under today's issues, mandamus to the Supreme Court. And if you go here and you read that mandamus, you'll find we have a memorandum in here and an order in there concerning the family courts and the probate courts. We need to fix them. And people, this is what your job is. this is you have it. Anybody who comes to the knowledge of things now has a duty. The duty is to fix the wrong before them. That's a duty. That's a command from God to begin with. It's a duty. It's a moral duty. We have to know. We have to do these things, you know. And so you start fixing your own problems in your own life, but the knowledge you're going to achieve, or you prepare for problems in the future, the knowledge you're going to receive is a knowledge that needs to be exercised in your own community and shared with other people, and to assist other people to get the same education you got, and to get involved and to take back the control of the courts, take back the control of our government, to take back 100% control. We leave them not a drop. Let's hold their feet to the fire. As Jefferson said, let's chain them down, or let's tie them down with the chains of the Constitution. That's what we need to do. We have a powerful paper, a very powerful paper called the United States Constitution, and we've given them certain authorities, and they are not to come outside those authorities. And 99% of the things that these people do are outside of their authority, and the people don't even know it. We need to know it and then fix it. And we have to act with authority, because we are the lawmakers. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for them, and they need to be obedient to it. We are above it. We are the authors of law. We are above the Constitution. They are underneath the Constitution. They need to obey our law. We all have to obey God's law. Of course, we're all under God's law, but God gave us the authority to have government by consent. So we write the law. We become the lawmakers to control our government, and that's what the Constitution is all about. And when people start to realize it from that perspective, now they get a whole different mindset and a position and an understanding and an empowerment, which is what the people need, to be empowered. You're being empowered by knowledge. Jefferson spoke about this proper education. We at National Liberty Alliance has given that proper education. And that's what people need to do. They need to get out there and take care of business and share it and bring this nation back under the Republic, which is where we belong. You know, we say the Pledge of Allegiance all the time. I don't know if they even do it in school no more. And if they don't, shame on us to allow that to happen. We need to get it back. They need to get out there and get that Pledge of Allegiance every day. And what do we pledge allegiance to? To the flag and the republic for which it stands. That's what we're making the pledge to protect the republic, which is the law of the land, which is the law we want to live under, which is what protects us and gives us our heritage and our liberties. That's what we want. And that's who we are. That's what we got to do. And
Shannon, John, is it possible to get your email address?
Well, if you want to send me something, again, you know, I can't take a lot of emails, but if you have something specific, mm-hmm. You can send it to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. But look, this is the place to talk to me right here. Once we get going, people that are in the course, if we have a conversation, we answer a question, which we'll have, plenty of time to answer questions throughout the course, but also in this program we have every Monday, this open forum, you can come and ask questions, and once you have knowledge, I'll be able to make them short answers because you'll understand them, and you'll be able to deal. But at some time to time, you know, I will have a special meeting with a few people in order to deal with problems or understand something better. You know, we'll work things out as we go. But remember, you know, we have over 10,000 members. I have a tremendous amount of workload. I don't have a secretary, mm-hmm. and I don't have a parallel. Mm-hmm. working with me, so my time is extremely limited. I can't get directly involved in anyone's case, but I can help them. But they have to get the knowledge for me to be able to communicate the necessary knowledge, and they have to have a certain knowledge or framework to be able to receive that knowledge and use it. You know? So that's what we got to...
I'll be taking a course and getting both your books, but I just don't know... What is the best way to get orders for protective orders? I've been trying for a year and a half to get protective orders from my husband, and nobody will help.
You know, what probably you have to do is a habeas corpus, and maybe talk to me in a week or so, and maybe we'll help you with a habeas corpus. But let's get educated.
Okay, thank you.
You know?
Thank you so much, John.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome, and I'd like to make a note here. You know, we have people that send information, or, you know, we tell them, or we send out an email, and then on that email will be mail at National Liberty Alliance. And then we have, you know, our leadership, I don't remember how many people, as a matter of fact, I'm looking into that now, are getting that mail. And different people might answer that mail. And hopefully all the mail is being answered. No one person can answer all that mail. But we do have people who have taken our mail and put it onto mailing lists. So it'll go out to, you know, 100 people, and then plus us, we'll be in there, and then we get garbage mail. So anybody doing that, please remove us from that. That's not the purpose of that. The purpose of our mail at National Liberty Alliance is for the purpose of trying to save this republic, to do the business of National Liberty Alliance. We don't need, you know, if someone has something to share, come to National Liberty Alliance's Monday night meeting here in our open forum and share it. You know, to sending us videos and putting us on a list to get a regular report. And it takes up our time that it's very valuable, and we don't have enough people doing the work that needs to be done. So we can't be having our attention drawn somewhere else. And, you know, so please take us off those mailing lists and don't abuse the mail coming to us. Again, you can get me. That's why. It's exactly why I'm here 2 hours every week. We used to be three, but it just became too much. But I'm here 2 hours, and Gerard's here usually with me. We're the founders of National Liberty Alliance, and we're here to be quizzed in any way. And if you have a better way of doing things, we're here to listen. If you have corrections to offer, we're here to listen. If we agree with you, we'll make the correction. We do it in public because it's the best way to do it. Everything is done, you know, in the open, and then people see who we really are through that kind of communications. But in any event, please don't abuse the mail, and you know, send whatever you have to, respond to whatever's going out to you if you need to respond. And again, most questions should be, you know, asked here and dealt with here. And from time to time, I do a private meeting here or there, and I'll talk with you about that habeas corpus in a week or so. Maybe I'll have the time to talk and a couple other people, if they're interested in coming into that conversation, they can come into that conversation. I'll make the announcement on a Monday call. All right?
Thank you so much, John.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, let's take our next call. Just want to let you know, let me see what time it is here. I have to leave at 5 to 11. Gerard's not here, is he? I didn't see him come in. And Brent's not here, right? Jan, Terry, anybody?
No, I haven't seen either one, John.
Okay. All right, we're going to take our next caller. Our next caller is, let's see, Larry, is it? I don't know what state. 480, is that Larry? You got the mic. But I got to leave in 10 minutes, I think. So let me see. Yeah,
I'll just take
about 8 minutes. So. Yeah?
I'll make it real brief, but I'll give you the whole story. But this is the first call I've been on, so I'm still getting my feet wet. I've been associated with other groups that I think they were misled, and so I left them. But I got taken advantage of by a government, and they destroyed my family, took my home, made me homeless for a little while. And I just want to get justice, so...
Well, again, let me say to you the same thing I said to the last two people. Get into the course. You want to get, if you want to connect your case to our case, write an affidavit. Keep it simple, okay? That affidavit should be just the facts, nothing more than the facts. No law, no nothing. Just the story, what has happened, the wrong. You know, I was walking down the street, I turned a corner, I got hit in the head with a bat by this cop, and next thing I know it, I'm in jail, I'm handcuffed, and they're doing this, and they're doing... Just the story, nothing more. Don't add.
Okay.
Don't.
How long can the affidavit be? Because I got a fairly long story.
A good affidavit shouldn't be any more than a page or two. I mean, sometimes under extenuating circumstances, it could be longer. But again, if it's more than a page or two, it's likely that you're just putting things in there that don't need to be said. Let me tell you, you have to have your story short, sweet, and focused, and you got to get all the facts. You don't want to leave nothing out. And once you do that affidavit, we will add cases by affidavit from this point forward, okay? And you will get justice eventually. It's just a matter of time, though. We don't know when. And, you know, we're looking, again, our paperwork went into the court. They were served today. All nine justices were served, plus one to the whole body, the United States Supreme Court. and they have no choice but to hear this case and to look at it. There is no choice, no choice. And if you read the paper, you'll understand why and how I can say that. But in any event, if we can get a turnaround quickly in the courts, and that's a possibility, then at least our courts will become back to courts of justice and we can pursue things quicker. The other thing is if that doesn't work out as well as we hope, then it'll be when we get to the other side. And the other side is after military intervention. And the military is ready to go. They've been poised for 2 years now, ready to go. And we don't know what that timing is, but it's going to happen soon.
Well, I'm a disabled veteran, so I can I'll be real supportive of that as well. Anyway, I appreciate your time. I was going to become a lawyer at one time, but I decided I didn't want to hang around a bunch of liars.
Right, that's what they are. But look, at common law lawyers are real lawyers. You know, our founding fathers were not bar attorneys, but a lot of them were lawyers. Okay, and they practiced law, they studied law, they created our nation under law. But the law they practiced and studied was the common law. They did not study the law of these creeps. You know, the bar attorneys. The bar association was created and started its investment into our colonies back in 1750 for the sole purpose to destroy our common law courts and bring us back under a better control by the king. And this was really, I think it's my opinion that it was Benjamin Franklin that really caused this situation, because he was so going up against the king in so many different ways, and the courts here in the colonies were not getting what the king wanted, and so that rebellion caused the king to push the Bar Association here on American soil, and it continued right into when we became the United States of America, and eventually it became the Bar Association turned into ABA when they created the American Bar Association, but it's still the Bar, B-A-R, and the registry. And they give the fact that they give a license makes the fact, or claim it to be a license, is the fact that they are still a bar, B-A-R, which is the British accredited, British Accredited Registry. Okay, so it's the American British accredited registry here. Same thing. But, you know, we do have a common lawyer that works with us. And comes into our call and sometimes takes call, you know, teaches us something. He's not here tonight. Brent Winters, he wrote a book called The Excellence of the Common Law. And he is not a bar attorney, but he is a licensed attorney in the sense that, you know, he can practice law. In a lot of states he can't probably because they only accept bar attorneys. But he wrote a book, and he's helping also to push this nation back under common law.
Excellent.
Okay, anything else? I might be able to take, let me see if I could take another call.
Okay.
I might be able to take another call for a minute or two, and then anybody else will have to get you next week. Get on and get in early if you can to the queue, and I'll try to get to the calls earlier if possible. So let me take one more caller. Thank you for your call. Anthony from Florida. You got the mic?
Yeah, John.
Only got a couple of minutes, though.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. My question is, I got your books, and I want to join the course.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, is there any income for any of these positions?
Well, you got the administrators for the juries. We're looking for 5 people in every county. All 5 will be administrators, 4 mainly administrators, and 1 paralegal who will also be an administrator. And the administrators are the people who will be working in the courts within your county. But you can work in the county next door. You don't have to work in your own county. Sometimes it may be closer to go to the county next door because your courthouse is on the other side of the county. In any event, we're looking to engage people, 5 people, training them to become administrators to take over the people's business. And we'll work out. It'll be a paid position, and we're going to be working through the budgets of the county, each of the counties that have already created a budget for the grand jury administrators that they use, and which are all political animals, usually bar attorneys. than the people who orientate them and so on and so forth. That has to be done by the people. So the controllers of will answer to the controllers of the county, which ultimately gets us to the states. But the, you know, the states give out enough money to be able to run the courts and many other, you know, agencies. But of course, there's a certain amount of money is budgeted for the purpose of this kind of a thing that we're talking about. We could do it a lot cheaper, and you'd make a good salary, but we could do it a lot cheaper in the sense that we'd prevent a lot of garbage and we'd get through court cases a lot quicker. A lot of cases could be solved and dealt with before they even enter into a court. You know, that's the proper way of common law. And so, yes, we're looking for to hire about 15,000 people across the nation, five in each county, and again, one paralegal. But in order to get into that, you have to take all of our courses, and we're doing certifications. You know, it'd be a wrongdoing for us to empower people or help people to get empowered, and they don't know what they're doing, and they cause more problems than what we already have. So we have to be somewhat educated. So we have all of our courses. You can find our courses on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. And if you go to, let me see if I can get this page open here. Okay,
well,
here it is.
I already had a case thrown out of court when I was on a jury. I already won my divorce battle in court. I mean, the other lawyer was in tears.
All right, well, anyway, if you want to get a job working within your county in the courthouse as an administrator with four other individuals, and you'd be under, you know, I can't get too much into it. If you come back next week,
I don't expect you to.
But you can find the courses all under Education Starts Here. And if you come down to courses, and you'll see all of our courses. You need to take them all. We have a jury administrator's accredited course, but we have all these other courses before that. And, of course, the new course that we're starting, which is Court Access and the Common Law course, then that also, all those courses are a requirement because you need to understand the process and procedures of the court and how things work, and you have to understand common law. And these courses will give it to you. They'll give you all the knowledge you need, plus the books will be helpful. And we have numerous handbooks. If you go over to Start a Committee of Safety and you come down to handbooks and tools, and these handbooks and tools are all for anybody starting committees of safety, but also we have common law handbook, we have elected officials handbook, we have the grand jury handbook, we have the petit jury handbook.
I have the handbook, so that's what I'm saying. I mean,
yeah, all of these handbooks here are an education, all of them.
Right.
And okay. You know, just if everybody gets on a reading program, you know, first I suggest, you should read your Bible every day for at least 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever you can do. And then you should read another half hour or more. I think you should be reading a half hour to an hour a day at bare minimum. People who are busy.
I read more than that, John.
Well, yeah.
The people who read more.
And the people who understand the importance of reading and real education. You know, I get a lot of people who say they can't understand the Bible. Well, they haven't spent enough time in the Bible. Just read it, and you're going to pull something out every time you read it. And you come from the beginning to end. You start all over again, and then you're going to say, whoa, I missed this, and I missed, and you come back again, and you missed more, and you pick up this and that. Same thing with any subject, of course. But and that is the case with all things. So, you know, reading is the key to knowledge. Matter of fact, what's his name? Musk. Musk didn't even attend school, he said. He said he went to college, got the books, he registered, got the books, and showed up for tests. That was it.
Uh-huh.
And he studied himself. And I can appreciate that. You can get through a book real quick and really engulf yourself and go beyond what's there and get all the education, go in and ace the tests, you know, which I wish I thought about that when I was younger, you know. But I wasn't as much into reading when I was younger either, so... All right, with that, I got to go. Sorry, everybody. There are people still in the queue, but I got to go pick up my son. Gerard's not here to take over the mic, and it is after 11 now, so I'm late. All right, with that, thanks, everybody, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Again, I want to encourage everybody to get educated. There's lots of education on our website, and you can ask more questions about it next week and take it from there. Good night, everybody. Thanks.
Good night.
Good night.